After spending 28 years in prison, Oscar Ray Boland was sentenced to death January 7, 2016. This is The Gruesome Reason Why. How are you all doing? I'm Travis.
This is Ellie.
And this is Simply Gore.
So I just have a quick comment to say, but why do so many horrendous murders and tragedies happen in Florida?
It is a good question.
There's so many murders that happen. I mean, you hear about like Ted Bundy and all these other stories, but I stumbled upon this one and I thought it was great. So we'll get into it. The profile of Oscar Ray Boland. He was born on January 22nd, 1962 in Portland, Indiana. His family worked as carnival workers in the United States in Florida, Indiana, Kentucky, and Ohio. In his early childhood, he was a troublemaker. His father was physically abusive growing up, and his mother was too. His family member said that she once walked him to a school bus stop on a leash like a dog, just to humiliate him. So he had a pretty rough upbringing. His first arrest was at the age of 15 in Ohio for theft. In the 80s, he moved to Florida when he started working as a carnival worker.
There's your answer right there. He was a carnival worker.
True. And in the 80s, things were so much more different in Florida. It wasn't as populated as it is now, especially not Tampa.
Tampa, Daytona.
Yeah. Very rural areas at that time. In 1982, he met his first girlfriend, Cheryl Hafner, I should say. So you want to know how he met her?
How did he meet her?
He abducted her. He said, "I pick you." Snatched her, pulled her into the car. They drove around the Tampa Bay area for hours before he was arrested that night for false imprisonment.
Yikes.
She thought it was romantic, so they eloped in 1983.
She thought it was romantic. How do you find a crazy one that fast?
I don't know, but they were meant to be. So just 3 short years after getting married in 1986, Oscar would start a serial killing spree in Tampa. His first victim was on January 25th, 25-year-old Natalie Blanche Holly, who was a night shift manager at Church's Chicken in the Tampa Bay area. After a long night of working, she was locking up the Church's Chicken store with a coworker in the early hours around 1:30 in the morning, which I guess things were open that late back then. But her body was later found that morning by a jogger in an orange grove. She had been stabbed to death. Her car was found abandoned 5 miles from where she had been found. His girlfriend, Cheryl, later in the 1990s, confessed to the police she and Oscar had been scoping out the restaurant that night he killed Natalie. After killing her, Oscar had gone back home to awaken Cheryl to tell her exactly what he had done. So, earlier that night, Oscar and Cheryl had been scoping out the churches.
So she's part of this?
Kind of. She's kind of his partner in crime. I mean, like, he met her abducting her.
But she involves herself for the killings, or she stays out of it?
She kind of involves herself in some way. Like, I can see that she's a little motivated and trying to help him, but not in the right way. It gets a little twisted.
It's a little twisted.
Yeah. So they were scoping out their restaurant, and I guess he dropped her back off at home, which their home wasn't really a home. It was a a traveling trailer, so like an RV. They had like an RV in the Tampa area. So he dropped her back off. Oscar abducted this 25-year-old Natalie, murdered her. After he had murdered her, he went to go get Cheryl and was like, hey, I abducted the girl we were looking at Church's Chicken, and I killed her. So Natalie decided that she would help Oscar clean up the blood in Natalie's car. They threw out the victim's blood-stained tennis shoes and her purse. So she helped clean up the scene.
Hmm.
Yes. Twisted. Months after this attack on November 5th, on 1987, Stephanie Collins, a Chamberlain High School student, disappeared after her shift at a drugstore where she worked. She had been abducted and last seen in the passenger seat of a white van. Her body was discovered a month later on December 5th along a road in Hillsborough County. Her autopsy revealed she had been stabbed to death and was fatally struck in the head multiple times.
Yeah, scissor. Her head was crushed in. Her skull was crushed in.
Yeah, she was. Stephanie's body was found wrapped in towels and blankets, and her skull was crushed.
Terrible.
So, yeah, so he was just targeting women after work, you know, vulnerable, after a long day at work, not really paying attention to their surroundings. So Oscar and Cheryl, that same day Oscar murdered Stephanie, in the tips that Cheryl later gives to the police, Oscar had picked up Cheryl after the incident, so after murdering Stephanie, and allegedly had held Stephanie's body in their traveling trailer prior to both of them dumping it. While they were on the way to the travel trailer, Oscar tried to explain himself to Cheryl why he had murdered Stephanie. He couldn't really explain himself. She's like, but why did you do it? He said, oh, I just struck her over the head and stabbed her to death.
Like, he didn't even care. Like, yeah. He didn't even faze him.
No, she's like, so what, you know, she's like, why did you do this? And he was like, oh, I don't know. So when they got to the trailer, Oscar loaded what appeared to be a body in a quilt onto his truck. They both drove together to dump the body on the side of the road. When she got back to the traveling trailer, she said she saw all the tools that he used to kill her in the sink that they had been rinsed off. So the knife he had used to stab her, some of the towels he had used to clean up her blood in the traveling trailer were in the sink, like, ringed out. She just went about her day, you know. She just thought this
was just sickening.
She is. I mean, she just went about her day. On the same day that Stephanie Collins' body was found, a 26-year-old went missing. Mind you, like, the police was never able to connect these murders back to him. It's the 80s. There's no cameras.
Right.
There's no cell phones. People's locations aren't being tracked. It was just a rural area in Tampa. You know, Tampa being a rural area, he was targeting young, vulnerable women and was not seen. Like, you know, people weren't on the lookout for him. They didn't know specifically what vehicle to look for and all of that.
But they didn't know anything about it yet. Like, they didn't have any suspects, so.
No, they didn't. So the 26-year-old went missing, Terry Lynn Matthews. She worked at a bank. She had worked late in the evening on December 4th until about 11 p.m., which I'm not really sure what banks are open that late. Or that it just doesn't make sense.
How late was it?
At 11 o'clock at night. I'm not sure banks are even open that late. But in the police report, her colleague reported that they had left work at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, but I don't know if some of the actual office people work later than the bank would be open for public.
That's true. So the night she went missing, she was, you know, leaving work at this time. Her normal work routine, her coworker said in the police report to visit her boyfriend after work. So she did that. She went to her boyfriend's. Her boyfriend, Gary McLand, said the two went to dinner that night and then went back to his place. His parents lived in the Tampa Bay area, but Terry lived in Pasco County, so it's about 30 minutes out from Tampa.
That's Pasco's like St. Petersburg, correct?
No, that's Pinellas.
That's Pinellas.
Towards Lando Lakes is Pasco County. So they went to dinner and they went back to his place, to his parents' house. Gary said that Terry left his house around 2 a.m. So she was there pretty late. Terry would call Gary when she got home, and it approximately took her about 30 minutes. Like I said, 30 minutes from the Tampa Bay area into the Land O'Lakes, Pasco County. It takes that long. But she never called him, and he was super worried. So he called Terry's mom, and she was like, no, she never came home. I thought that she had just stayed the night with you. So he got super worried sick because that wasn't usual of her. So he got into his car and started driving towards Pasco County. He was driving on the side of the road, I guess somewhere on the highway. I'm not really sure what highway was there, 75 or back streets at that time. And he said that he spotted Terry's red Honda parked in front of a post office near Lando Lakes. So he was like, why is she parked in front of the post office this late? When he parked next to her vehicle, it was empty, but the vehicle lights were still on. And he noticed that there was mail, the family's mail was scattered on the floor. So I don't know if she was picking up mail at the post office from a P.O. box.
I know growing up, we had a P.O. box.
Yeah? Mail wasn't delivered to your residence?
No.
Directly?
You had to pick it up. We lived in the middle of nowhere, so.
Where did you grow up?
Dresden, Maine.
There you go. So it's probably about the same thing, since it was like kind of a rural area at that time, you know? Especially Pasco County. Like, if Tampa Bay wasn't populated, I can't even imagine 30 to 40, you know, in the suburby area.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure everything, anything that wasn't on the beach was...
Yeah, completely dead. Rural. So anyway, he noticed that the mail was scattered on the floor. He panicked. But it also wasn't unusual for Terry to stop at the post office after seeing him and pick up the family mail. But he just, you know, she would still call him arriving as soon as she got home. The police were able to obtain video surveillance from the post office that show that around 2:48, Terry arrived and picked up mail. But they weren't able to get anything else on surveillance. Like, they didn't see if she was abducted, if somebody had grabbed her from her car. They just saw her picking up mail because they must have cameras inside the post office. So she was still alive at 2:48. So just jumping back into the timeline, December 4th is when she left work. She had left Gary's home around 2 o'clock in the morning. At 2:48, she's still alive because she's picking up mail from the Land O'Lakes post office. Later on that morning, on December 5th, her body was found wrapped in a sheet and had been dumped near a railroad in the Pasco County area. She was stabbed in the neck and chest repeatedly and had been struck in the head. She was found in wet clothing, and in the police report, it says it didn't rain that week. So she was soaked.
Was there water near there?
In Pasco, there's no water. In Lando Lakes, that's just all. That's not near the beach.
So I wonder why she was all wet.
Exactly. Her autopsy revealed semen was found near her vaginal area. So she was 100% sexually abused by Oscar. Which is just sickening to think about. Poor girl. So the autopsy revealing, you know, his DNA was how they were able to pin him down to these murderers. The entire year of 1986, Oscar is a free man, never caught for the murders of the three young women. In 1987, he was working in a Ohio carnival, and he was arrested for kidnapping a 20-year-old waitress in Toledo. He attempted to kill her with a gun, but when he pulled the trigger, the gun had jammed. She was let go on the side of the highway in Pennsylvania.
So he did that with two other people, two other guys.
He did it with two other guys?
He did it with two other guys.
So they arrested him, and he was sentenced to 22 to 75 years in prison for this. So they finally caught him. Now they have, you know, his DNA. And this is how they were able to, you know, get him tried for these three young women he had killed in Florida.
So he got the 22 to 75 years for the one in Ohio.
Yes.
Okay.
That's when they captured him.
That's when they got him.
Yes. So while Oscar's in prison, it's 1989 now, he divorces Cheryl. She later remarried Danny Colby. So Danny Colby marries Cheryl, and they were just casually talking about her ex-husband when she confessed all of his crimes to Danny. Danny was horrified by everything she was telling him, and he was like, "We need to call the police." So he called the police in as a tip. Then the police later investigated and interviewed Cheryl, and this is when she was basically confessing all of Oscar's murders in Florida, and this is how they were able to tie him to the killings in the Tampa Bay area.
So it says more witnesses came out. So I wonder.
Yes, so it gets a little bit juicier. So after Danny, you know, called the police and Cheryl basically confessed to the police his murderers and that she had been an accessory to them, Bolin's half-brother also testified against him in court and confessed he had kidnapped a woman in 1987 in Texas, I guess while he was working at a carnival, and him and Bolin both kidnapped her. Bolin raped her outside of a convenience store before he killed her.
So the half-brother kidnapped the girl with him?
Yes. His half-brother kidnapped a woman in Texas and watched Oscar rape her and watch Oscar kill her. And he was never, like, he was never caught. This is in 1987.
That's a good guy.
You know, it's insane how this guy was just basically on a murder spree. But he finally, you know, is able to be tied to the murders in Tampa. So he goes into trial and he's now a single man. And he ends up falling in love with a Tampa socialite who is part of his defense team. His paralegal, Rosalie Martinez, who at the time was married to a high profile Tampa attorney who was representing Bolin. So Bolin's attorney wife, who's his paralegal, ends up falling in love with Bolin. She divorces Bolin's attorney, which is her husband, and marries Bolin on live TV
while he's in prison.
So Rosalie marries Bolin. Rosalie's ex-husband is representing Bolin in court.
It's
so weird. Yeah. So they eloped in 1996 on live TV. She made crazy claims basically saying that Bolin was innocent, that he had no way of committing these crimes. He was such a great guy. Fast forward to a little bit of insight on Rosalie. She was also a paralegal on the defense team for Casey Anthony. So I don't know how credible she could be. But after all of this, he was linked to the Tampa Bay murders and sentenced to life in prison with an execution. So he was killed by lethal injection in 2016.
They didn't even charge him in Texas, right?
No.
They didn't even go after him?
No. He technically, I mean, he was serving time for the rape and killing he did in, or it was a rape only, right? Or he tried to kill her. He tried to kill the 20-year-old waitress.
I don't think he killed her because the gun jammed.
Yes. So he was captured for the kidnapping of the waitress in Toledo. Then he got basically tried for the murders in Florida, and he was killed.
So it looks like Bolin was found guilty and sentenced to death three times for each of the Tampa women.
Crazy. And in his interview, he said, you know, he was happy that it was all over. And he went a little bit into detail saying, well, we should play the last interview before he's killed by lethal injection. But he says, I don't know what you're trying to solve with this. You're basically taking a life away because I was found guilty of taking three lives away.
Do you like yourself?
Yeah. I'm comfortable with myself. There's a lot of things in my past. You know, I wish I could change, but I'm at peace with myself. The state's about to kill me, and they think they're getting justice, and I'm like, well, they're not getting justice. They're just going to kill somebody else. I was like, and I'm like, they killed me 28 years ago when they locked me up. Now they're just releasing me.
So you're saying you didn't murder these women?
No.
You didn't murder Natalie Holly?
No.
Stephanie Collins?
No.
Terry Lynn Matthews?
No. I didn't know. I've never seen them. Never met them.
Who thinks like that?
Yeah, he has no remorse for anything.
No, but an eye for an eye, right? I mean, yep. You killed someone, so.
He killed four.
Yeah, you're right. He did kill
multiple people that he got convicted of,
and who knows what he could have gotten away with. So another.
So the only thing I think is he might have only killed the four because he seemed like he was proud and wanted to tell somebody about it. Because why would he tell his wife?
Well, I mean,
so you would think that he'd say, oh, I've done it before. I've killed these and this. And
I don't know. The guy just had bad juju. I mean, who picks up their first girlfriend by abducting them?
It's kind of weird that he didn't kill her, huh?
No, but maybe he knew that she was
crazy. Because she married him?
No, submissive. She was submissive. He abducted her. They rode around in the Tampa Bay area. And he had later gotten arrested that same day for false
false impersonation?
Yeah. And she was like, she didn't say anything about him kidnapping her.
No kidding.
She didn't say anything to the police. She was
like, did she ever get brought up on charges for accessory?
No, she didn't. She was completely
exonerated
because of her confessions, because of cooperation with the police. But something that I read in an article, and I'm not sure how credible this is, but in 1986, he had been working for a tow truck company. And the tow truck company's owner's wife had said that her husband knew a little bit about Oscar, but he never really shared a lot about him with her. So I guess in between his carnival jobs, he had like other odd jobs, you know. And she had said that her husband had told her, man, I should have known that Oscar was a bad guy. He was just bad news. But she never really got anything more out of her husband because her husband ended up committing suicide.
Wow.
That same year in 1986. So I wonder if he knew or had seen some pretty messed up things.
I bet he told him. I mean, he seemed like he likes to brag about it.
Yeah. So there wasn't too much about that, but she did come up on the police reportings saying that her husband may have been tied to Oscar in some way, but that was about it. There wasn't anything else to it, any more details to it.
Pretty gruesome.
It is. And I wondered just why it took so long. I mean, These murders happened in the 80s. Why did it take so long to try him and execute him?
Yeah, so they do. People stay in prison a long time when they're on death row.
They do. The victims' families were finally happy when it happened. They said that finally justice had been served for their daughters. So they were really happy, you know, that this happened. 2016, Governor Rick Scott at the time had announced his death, and they were just ecstatic, cheerful. I can't even imagine 20 years go by and no justice is served.
I don't know. I don't think it really would matter to me if it was life in prison or death sentence. Death, you know.
Well, that's what he was saying. He said that he had been confined to a room for 20-something years. It really made no difference. I mean, it was just...
death is kind of the easy way out.
Yeah.
You sit in a cell day after day for years on end.
Absolutely. He was pretty young, too, you know, when he was committing all these crimes.
Yeah, he had to be.
But not so young.
So he died.
Kind of looked pretty rotten in that picture in his mugshot.
Well, I'm sure. But he was 53 when he died, so...
still pretty young.
He was 28 years.
His whole life he had served.
So he's 25. He's in his early 20s.
Yeah, committing all these reckless crimes. But, I mean, he didn't come from the best of childhood, I guess. His dad used to beat him for being a troublemaker.
Yeah, make life what you wanted.
And then worked as a carny, you know.
Carnies are crazy anyway.
Like, I'm sure.
Spooky buggers.
I'm sure he saw some weird stuff or learned some bad habits, you know, from those people. And it seems like he did that.
Never trust a carny.
Yeah, not at all. So this wraps up this week's episode. Stay tuned for next week's episode on Sunday. Have a good night.
Good night.